The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Ann Rostosky. I'm a member of the worship committee and one of today's lay leaders for our service. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world with compassion, peace, and justice for all. So welcome to everyone here in person and those of you on Zoom. Welcome whoever you love, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whatever's important to you. If you're a good pumpkin carver or not, you are welcome here. So thanks for joining us today. We're going to be learning about the United Nations today. And did you know that it's the 80th anniversary of the UN, which is, I think, pretty important. And it's going through some challenging times. So anyway, Rick Cole will be lighting our chalice today.
Driving skills put to the test.
All right, good morning. Okay, so different yet united. We come from many places along different paths, bringing different truths. We come with different histories and different realities, and yet we come together as one people with faith that we can use our differences to heal ourselves and each other, to bring wholeness to a fractured world. We come seeking to find community, to find acceptance of who we are. In this place, we may find others who are much like us and others who are much different. May our lit chalice remind us that we are a people taught by different stories and many voices, but always one people working for a world where love creates justice, and justice gives birth to peace. That's by Pat Uri Lichty.
Thank you, Rick. And now, every Sunday we say, we light our peace lamp and responsively read the words, "May peace be with us." If this is your first or second time here, I would encourage you to come more than once, and particularly try to come on a Sunday where our minister is speaking. Sorry, I forgot to actually light it. Now we have peace, right? He'll be here in 2 weeks. So, and if you're interested in learning more about Unitarian Universalism, we have a literature rack in the lobby where you can pick up brochures. So we're going to start off with our welcoming song, which is We'll Build a Land. So rise as you're willing and able to sing the songs. The words are on the screen.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where the forests are fertile, where the water and wind run clean and clear, and community matters more than possessions. Come share this land, let's build it right here. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
One more time.
Oh, come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, for justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
Which was designed for the kids, but I think it's informative for all of us, the moment for all ages. Whoops. Yeah, that's my explanation.
We only have one planet. It's organized into almost 200 countries, which are home to 7.5 billion people, living and working and playing and eating and sleeping and arguing too. Humans argue a lot.
Isn't there anything we could do to try and help work things out?
Actually, there's this thing called the United Nations. It was created way back in 1945 after the world had been through two really terrible wars.
Hooray!
The United Nations, also known as the UN, was created to try to prevent wars from happening and to help countries get along.
How do they do that?
By trying to make sure everyone has what they need to live a good life. Food, shelter, medicine, a clean environment, dignity, and safety.
Hooray!
So the UN is kind of like a club?
Kind of, but a really huge club. It's an organization, and almost every country is a member, 193 in total.
Is there a secret handshake?
No, but countries do have to pay to join.
Huh. So how does the UN actually work?
Well, all decisions are made by vote, including who the leader of the UN will be. That person is called the Secretary General. The Secretary General works with all the other UN members to identify problems and work towards peaceful solutions. Their job is to speak for all the people of the world, ensuring they come first no matter what decision is being made, and to always act for peace.
Hooray!
And what about kids? Does the UN have anything to do with us?
Yes, in a big way. The United Nations created a document called the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. It outlines things all children should have or be able to do.
What things are those?
Like every kid has the right to be safe, to learn, and to play.
Wow, the UN's pretty cool and important.
You can think of the UN like the world's referee, here to make sure problems and arguments are dealt with properly and peacefully. And while the UN still has a long way to go towards fairly achieving its goals, members of the UN will continue to try and work together.
With or without the secret handshake.
Peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. Okay. So, 2 days ago, this past Friday, October 24th, was United Nations Day, as Anne mentioned. This day every year marks the anniversary of the date in 1945, on October 24th, when the UN Charter was ratified. It was ratified by a majority of the 50 original members. Now there's almost 200. And this year was the 80th anniversary of that momentous signing. One of our past members, Rosalind Welf, some of you may remember her, loved a folk song written in 1950 by Ed McCurdy. It begins with a verse, "Last night I had the strangest dream I ever dreamed before. I dreamed the world had all agreed to put an end to war." Well, that same dream had inspired world leaders 30 years earlier, after World War I, to form the League of Nations to promote collective security, disarmament, and resolution of international disputes through negotiation and arbitration. Woodrow Wilson won the Nobel Prize in 1919 for his role as the leading architect of the League of Nations. However, in 1920, the US Senate voted 49 in favor, 35 against ratification of the League Covenant. It was short of the two-thirds majority required for ratification, and the US never joined the League of Nations. Germany was initially not permitted to join because of its role in World War I. But then in 1926, under the Weimar Republic, they were let in. 7 years later, Hitler withdrew from the League of Nations. Japan, Italy, and Spain all withdrew between 1933 and 1939. The League of Nations proved powerless to resolve the many international conflicts that led up to World War II, nor was it able to do anything to prevent the carnage that followed. The League's headquarters in Geneva was actually abandoned in 1940 and remained empty until the end of World War II, at the same time during which millions of Russians died in Stalingrad, millions of Jews and others were exterminated in death camps. My father fought in France and Germany against the perpetrators of these atrocities. After World War II, the nations of the world made another run at actualizing that strangest dream of putting an end to war. After the signing of the UN Charter in October 1945, the first meeting of the United Nations General Assembly was held in London in January 1946. 51 nations were represented. New York City was selected as the site for the UN headquarters, and construction began on September 14, 1948, and was completed on October 9, 1952. I was born in 1950, and when I was a kid, the UN was new. We collected for UNICEF. Do you remember doing that? On Halloween. My high school class visited the UN headquarters building in New York City. Did some of you do that also? I grew up believing, or at least hoping, that the UN might save us from the nightmare of all-out nuclear war that I and some of my classmates were convinced could end human civilization in the near future. I earnestly believe that UNICEF could end disease and starvation. In reality, the UN may have relieved some suffering and prevented or stopped some conflicts, but it proved ineffective when North Korea invaded South Korea, the Soviet Union invaded Hungary, the Iron Curtain took on the tangible form of the Berlin Wall, when Syria and Egypt attacked Israel in 1967, when the US fought a war in Vietnam, when Russia fought wars in Afghanistan and Chechnya, when the US fought a war in Afghanistan and two wars in Iraq, and when Bashar al-Assad gassed his own people in Syria. Now Russia has invaded Ukraine. The UN has been unable to bring peace to the Middle East or to Sudan or dozens of other conflict areas around the world. Wars and disease and starvation continue. So my question is the UN headed for a repeat of the fate of the League of Nations, or is there still hope for a better world? I don't really know, but I do suggest that you pay attention in the next couple of weeks. There's an election in the United States on November 4th. Before that, there is an election in Argentina, and there is going to be an election in Hungary. And if you're paying attention to what's going on in Hungary, it's very interesting. So we're at an inflection point, I think, where we could go down the road of the League of Nations, or we could come back to where the UN and the UN Charter was headed. So one last thing. In November of 1946, an agency of the UN, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, was born. In many ways, UNESCO, among other accomplishments, has embodied and actualized the line from our gathering hymn. If you remember, we'll build a land building up ancient cities, raising up devastations from old. UNESCO heritage sites have been recognized and preserved throughout the world. And we're going to play a short video from UN Day, October 24th, 2015, 10 years ago, the 70th anniversary of the UN, when more than 350 landmarks of all kinds, not just UNESCO heritage sites, in some 80 countries were lit in blue, the official color of the United Nations. So while this video is playing, I'd like you to think of a place in the world that is special to you, or maybe an ancestral country, a language other than English that was spoken in your or your parents' home, or a place you have visited where you experienced a different culture. After the video, raise your hand and we'll bring a microphone around, and we'd like you to name the place or the language and tell us in a few words about its significance for you. And those on Zoom can raise their physical or virtual hand, and our tech team will let them chime in. Okay. All right. Anybody raising their hand? Okay.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Doug Spandau. I'd like to recognize Israel and Germany, a lot of my heritage and history, Russia also. My father fought in World War II to liberate the Buchenwald concentration camp after they did their destruction, and that's where we are today. And Jewish war veterans, yes.
Linda Weaver. I thought of the Blue Lagoon and when we were in Iceland in December, and it was a very special place for me because it was the only time that we were in Iceland that I was actually warm because it's a geothermal waste and everybody goes there like it's a spa. So that was the Blue Lagoon in Iceland.
Hi, my name is Nicole Reuther. We saw in that video they lit up a portion of the Great Wall of China blue. I got to walk on a small section. Well, it wasn't small, but we walked on a little bit of it, of the Great Wall outside of Beijing on March 13th, 2002, when I was 15. I remember the exact date because the following day, March 14th, is my baby sister's gotcha day. So the first day that we met her when she was brought to us from an orphanage to our hotel in Changsha. She's now 22 and wants to be an orthopedic surgeon someday. She's a really cool kid.
My hometown is New York City. For a little while, I had a job on the East Side, and I used to walk over to the UN cafeteria every day for lunch. They had the greatest sandwiches made on toasted cheese bread. And the language, every language under the sun.
Hi, David Perry. When I was a teenager, I spent a year in the Netherlands as an exchange student, and that was a very eye-opening, really increased my worldview. And because I was a Canadian, I was basically welcomed with open arms because everybody remembered the Canadian soldiers that liberated Holland at the end of World War II.
I'm Katana Salmon, and I'm a visitor here, so I'm very pleased to be here. I just felt like I needed to express how wonderful it was being in Bhutan. You know, there's the gross happiness thing, which is very gimmicky, it seems like, but what you experience when you're there is a deep commitment to the well-being of the environment and the people, and it translates into a place which feels very serene and very welcoming, and it's just a wonderful experiment on Earth.
Yeah. Good morning, my name is Tracy, I'm also a visitor. I wanted to share my, I personally don't have a lot of experience. I haven't gone as very far from the Jersey Shore. However, my grandparents, my grandfather, he's passed. He served in what he called Italy during the war. That was on my father's side. My other grandfather, that experience I have. His mother's from Poland. We had I'm very Polish and very German. So I have a lot of background with the language, with which a lot of it I cannot repeat. That is what I learned in Polish that I remember as a child. But I had that culture, and then I had a lot of the stories from my grandfather serving in Italy.
So personally, I have never left the country, but my grandmother came here from France following World War II, and thank you.
And we have one entry from the chat from folks at home. I'm going to pass this up to Mike for a minute.
I'll be here on behalf of my better half. Figure that tongue twister out. When I was a kid, I spent many summers with my aunt in Philadelphia. My aunt didn't want us to be country kids. We went to churches of all religions, and we spent a lot of time in Chinatown. My aunt made sure we used chopsticks from a young age and were exposed to many different cultures. It absolutely shaped who I am, not a country kid.
I'm going to share too before I start talking. I like to travel, and when I travel, I try to learn the language where I'm going to be. It doesn't work very well. I know this much of a lot of languages. Thank goodness for Google Translate. It's wonderful. And I also am a substitute teacher, and I teach ESL a lot, and it comes in handy for that too. But I think it's wonderful, all the languages, all the diversity, the different cultures that we've been exposed to. You mentioned Bhutan. I'm a vegetarian because a monk from Bhutan stayed with us one time and he convinced me that I shouldn't eat meat. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit different twist about the UN because I think it's very interesting and not many people know about Unitarian Universalists' involvement with the UN. So we have a long-standing relationship with them, primarily through what's called the UU at UN office. Founded in 1962, this office served as a hub for UU engagement with the UN, connecting UUs to global issues and fostering advocacy for UU values at the UN. The partnership is rooted in shared values of human rights, peace, and justice, which are reflected in both the UN Charter and UU principles. The UU at UN's advocacy agenda is guided by statements and resolutions from the UUA General Assemblies. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, that's an annual gathering of UUs. It happens somewhere in the nation. Last year it was in Baltimore, a few years ago it was in Pittsburgh, I went to that one. But people come from all over the country and sometimes from other countries to that gathering. The focus areas are peace and disarmament, human rights, and climate justice. As Preston mentioned, Unitarian Universalism's long history with the United Nations can be traced back to the early 20th century. Both the Unitarians and the Universalists, at one time they were two separate groups, were active in the League of Nations Association and later closely monitored the creation of the UN. On this slide, Adlai Stevenson II is the second from the right. He visited All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City during his 1956 campaign for US president. I remember my mom loved him. I knew that name. The Reverend Dr. Walter Donald Kring on the right was an ardent supporter of the UUA's office at the United Nations. Stevenson served as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations from 1961 to 1965. Adlai Stevenson set up a program for what was called envoys from UU churches to the UN. Unitarian Universalist envoys to the UN still exist, serving as liaisons between their congregations and the UU office at the UN. These envoys link local congregations to the work of the UUA at the UN. The main purpose of the envoys is to inform their congregations about the UU office's work and the UN goals and concerns, as well as to help engage with UN-related tasks and events. At one time, there were as many as 500 such envoys. I checked, there's only 20 today, unfortunately. The UUA office at the UN represented the UUA and the Canadian Unitarian Council at the UN, where the office promoted the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, as reflected in the UN Charter. Through targeted education, advocacy, and outreach, the office engaged Unitarian Universalists in support of international cooperation and the work of the UN. With the merger of the two denominations in 1961, the Unitarian Universalist Association formed an advisory committee on the UN. In 1963, the UUA principles and purposes, which we still follow today, were merged into one document with marked similarity to the UN Charter, which was written in 1945, and to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was written in 1948. On September 3rd, 2002, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan inaugurated the International Criminal Court, passing the gavel to the Assembly of States Parties. The first religious leaders to formally attend this historic ceremony were Reverend William Sinkford, who was the UUA president, and Reverend Olympia Holmes, UUA Director of International Affairs and board member of the UU office at the UN. In 2023, however, the UUSC, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, assumed the leadership of the UU at UN's work to leverage its own existing strengths in global human rights advocacy, international law, and movement building. You will hear more later about UUSC and how you can support their efforts. 80 years after its founding, the United Nations faces new challenges. The climate crisis is raging, inequalities are growing, and poverty is on the rise. Terrorism and the nuclear threat persist, and new threats have emerged as artificial intelligence becomes ubiquitous, rushing ahead of regulation. The UN is trying to modernize, but it is difficult. It has financial challenges. Not every member keeps their dues up to date. We are at a pivotal moment in history. The choices we make today will have a profound impact on current and future generations. This is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to come together as one world and create a future worth living for. And now we will have matters of the heart. Cindy, would you like to come up?
Good morning. I'm Cindy Westfall. I don't know if I should stand on this or not. Am I too tall? I'm giant. Never been called too tall before.
I'm the short person.
I thought maybe I would like to have a new perspective. So, I'm Cindy Westfall. I'm a member of the CARE team, and we introduce Matters of the Heart each week. I'm also a member of the worship committee and board member. Each Sunday, we set apart time for a special ritual. An action that speaks to a larger truth. The truth is that you are important, that your life matters, and that this community cares about you. That is the deeper truth. Even you who have never been here before, we care about you because of your humanity and who you are. So that is the deeper truth which we witness to by inviting anyone who has a heavy heart or a joyous heart to share. The ritual is a time to share so that our joys might be lightened, so that our sorrows may be lessened. Please start with your name, introduce yourself, and speak into the microphone. And if you are online, raise your virtual or physical hand and you will be unmuted by John.
This time of sharing to a close, we're going to sing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life. This is by Carolyn McDade, performed by the First Parish Brewster Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And the words will appear on screen for you in just a few minutes.
Of the heart, we like to close with a reflection. And I think the reminder from what we've heard from everyone is that there are triumphs in sadness and there's happiness, and what we choose to look at sometimes is the difference in our day, right? So if we can just take a minute to close our eyes, take a deep breath in, and deep breath out. And as you breathe in the positive energy that's all around us today. And as we breathe out, let that grief and heavy heart go. Breathe in happiness and the love of this fellowship and friendship, and breathe out the heavy grief of what we see and what we feel. Breathe in happiness and joy, and breathe out. And take a few moments to breathe in, listen to your breath, and breathe out. And open your eyes and feel the joy. Thank you.
I'm just going to close with a few words reminding everyone of our UU principles, and how many of those principles are reflected in the Charter of the United Nations, and how the United Nations is in some ways an embodiment of our own principles. Our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Our second principle is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Our fourth principle is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Our fifth principle is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. And our sixth principle is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of hope for justice and world peace that we will carry with us into the world. And we will close with a very simple song. All we are saying is "Give Peace a Chance" by the Beatles.
So I mentioned earlier that you would learn more later about the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. And the project that we'll be undertaking for the next month or so is called Guest at Your Table, which happens to be their largest fundraiser. So there's a short video about what Guest at Your Table is. But before we show you that, the reason we're doing it over a month is they focus on four different needs, I'll say, throughout each campaign. And I have the poster here showing you what the four different groups are, but I'm really excited because this year one's in Philadelphia. So, but we're gonna feature one of those each week over the next four Sundays. And then we will collect your boxes, your donations, the last Sunday of November after Thanksgiving. You know, and the idea is to have a little box at your table. You put money in there as if you're paying for a meal for someone, And then we collect that at the end of the month. Okay, so here's just a brief video telling you about Guest at Your Table.
Did you know that Unitarian Universalists have been coming together for decades to support human rights through the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee's Guest at Your Table program? During this special program, UUs of all ages learn more about important issues and the groups or partner organizations UUSC works together with to advance human rights. Working with community-based groups like UUSC Partners is a great way to get help directly to folks after disasters like a hurricane and helps make sure the needs that are most important to communities are being met. UUSC works with more than 50 partner organizations around the globe, together responding to humanitarian crises, gender-based violence, persecution of activists, climate change, and more. Guest at Your Table is a chance to get to know our partners and these issues better through learning the stories of four people connected to UUSC Partners as if we were sharing a meal together. They are the guests in Guest at Your Table. After getting to know the guests, UU spread the word about human rights and raise much needed funds for UUSC Partners. From supporting youth leadership trainings to amplifying their voices to world leaders to buying needed supplies after a natural disaster, our partners request our help with all sorts of projects that make a difference in their communities. Through Guest at Your Table, Unitarian Universalists form a mighty web that helps support UUSC partners in their important work. Thank you for helping keep this important tradition going strong and joining us in the Guest at Your Table program.